Tonight, we have Dr. Selena Wang, who has come all the way up from UC Davis, and she is the research director of the UC Davis Olive Center, and where she develops and manages a wide range of projects in olive oil quality and authenticity. And let's see, she has a PhD in organic chemistry from UC Davis, and so let's give her a round of applause.
Olive Center. Have any of you heard about our center before? Some of you? Yeah, we published a couple reports 2 years ago, and it got a lot of media attention, and that's probably how you have heard about us. But I want to tell you a little bit about our center, because it's a really unique story. So Olive Center started in 2008, and it didn't start as a center. It was an olive oil program that our director developed, and he noticed these are the trees on campus. These are 75-year-old olive trees. All the olives were falling on the ground, as you can see right here. The students are riding on them. For some reason, they fall. The students fall because the olives are sticky. So if you're not an experienced rider, then you may trip and then you may fall. And then the university spends about $60,000 a year, every year, on bike-related lawsuits. Yeah. So we figure, and you know, for 50, 70 years, no one did anything about this. That sounds like an opportunity, right? So our director said, we're going to harvest these olives. We're going to sell them at the bookstore, only at UC Davis bookstore. And you know, we may not make a lot of money selling the olive oil, but at least you don't have to pay $60,000. So, you know, from the get-go, it's a good idea, and then you won't lose money. University loves any idea that's not going to cost them money. So that's how we started, and it's been successful since that day. And there hasn't been any lawsuits since 2008. So we have harvested these trees. We can harvest these trees. No machines, no special tools, just a lot of students. And I'm out there, and our director's out there every year. In fact, that's what's going to be happening next month. That's when we harvest olive. So this is our mission. We wanted to have a really well-defined mission and tell people what we are and what we do. We want to do for olives and olive oil what UC Davis did for wine. Now, most of you know the good story. You know, we now have a huge department of viticulture enology. A lot of you are wine lovers. We need a center for olives and olive oil because this industry is growing really, really fast. So, we're 100% self-funded. Since that olive program started in 2008, the economy was not good then. The university was not gonna give us money and say, here, go start a center. So, the university gave us $25,000 for the first 2 years. That's it. So that money was enough to pay for half of our director's salary. And everything else comes from these oils that we sell at the bookstore. Okay, so we have a few different ones, and the university dining, so there's a couple restaurants on campus, and the student dining hall, they also purchase these oils from us. So that's a way that they support us as well. This is how we are able to make it work. So all these oils, they count about 40% of our revenue. 33% research. That's a large chunk of money, and then that's really where I spend a lot of my energy on, writing research grants, going after them fairly aggressively, as aggressive as I can be. And 70% is events. So we also put on short courses at our center, and we invite producers, food buyers, they come and then they learn from us so that they can go back and then teach their customers better. And 10% is donation. It's not a lot, but the olive oil industry is a struggling industry. You know, it's like how wine industry 50 years ago. Right now, no one is making money. And I will talk about why, and you will get to know it's why it's a struggling industry. It's definitely not because their quality isn't great. But as they develop, you know, we could have a department that's like a Robert Mondavi Institute. We could have that for Olive Center. So right now, we are a lean organization, two full-time staff. It's me and the art director, who is the person who started it. And then he has a background in politics. He was in the Capitol for 25 years before he joined UC Davis. And you know, you can do a lot between a politician and a scientist. Because there's a lot of times you think, that's not like a scientific question. And a lot of times it's actually a political question. And then, you know, we'll talk about that too. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you about Olive Center 1.0. That means there will be 2.0 coming up, so you have to stay awake so you can get to 2.0. So in the past 5 years, we've done a lot of research on mechanical harvesting for table olives. It's a challenging thing because unlike olive oil, when you harvest them, if you bruise the fruit, it's okay. You're going to make oil out of them. But we're talking about, you know, those black, ripe table olives that you see on pizza or in burritos. Those, if you bruise them, people are not gonna buy them. So there's been a lot of research on mechanical harvesting that it can do less damage to the fruit. And we have done a lot of research on olive oil processing, the chemistry and sensory of olive oil, and we'll talk about that. We have established a sensory panel. Olive oil is one of the very few foods that actually require sensory standard, and you get to be the expert today in a little bit. And we have a selection chemistry lab. If you're ever on campus, let me know, I can give you a tour to our lab. We have published three reports, and that exposed fraud in the olive oil marketplace, and that got us a lot of media attention. Our director was actually on Dr. Oz last year. So yeah, that's huge. I think a lot of people were jealous because, you know, he's not an academic and then he got to be on Dr. Oz. So. But I think part of the reason is because our research is so relevant and we present in such a way that people can understand, which is not always easy for scientists. So. And we have secured $3 million in research funding. So even though our university doesn't give us money, we do give back quite a bit. So, because they do take the, majority of our research money. So that's what we do to keep our lights on and our water flowing. So why should we care about olive oil? Let's start with this question. How much of olive oil consumed in the U.S. is made domestically? A, 3%. B, 5%. C, 10%. D, 20%. How many of you think it's A? Okay, how many of you think it's B? Okay, how many of you think it's C? Okay, how many of you think it's D? Okay, so it looks like a lot of people think it's A or B. You're right, it's 3%.
Wow.
We'll show you. So that's not so depressing considering 5 years ago, it's 1%.
Wow.
So we're making great progress. This is what it looks
like we are the third largest olive oil consumer in the world, right after Spain and Italy. And it's growing rapidly. Two other countries that's growing really fast is China and Japan. They're actually planting trees in Japan and China. I'm not sure how that's going to, because the weather is not exactly Mediterranean. But they wanted to try, so we'll see. Usually it takes trees a couple years before they start producing fruit, so we'll see how that goes. But we are by far the largest importer. So it's our voice is important, right? Does this look familiar?
Yes. Yes.
When you go to a supermarket store, these are what's right at the eye level, right? Mm-hmm. So I have nothing against them, but I'm just putting it here so you can see. The label is confusing. How do you know which one to buy? We know extra virgin is good for us, but then olive oil, what's wrong with olive oil? And then what's wrong with extra light? It's hard to know. The labeling is very confusing. That leads me to a quick pop quiz. Light olive oil means it's A, lighter in calorie, B, lighter in color, C, lighter in flavor. How many of you think it's A? How many of you think it's B? How many of you think it's C? Okay. Yeah, you guys are really smart. I feel like I don't need to talk to you. You already know. It's C. B is sometimes true. Because light olive oil, let's go back here, like this one. You see the fine print here? You say tasting. So it's got the same calorie, 120 calories per tablespoon. All of them are the same. This one is a refined olive oil. When you buy canola, vegetable, soybean, they're all refined oil. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just a process that they do. This one is 100% refined oil. This one is usually a mixture of refined and extra and virgin. And you can assume it's probably 99% of this and 1% of that big here. And it's not always light in color. Color is not an indication of quality because varietal, like wine, and environmental have huge effect on irrigation. Have huge effect on the color of oil. So when you look at the oil that's in front of you, there are different colors, but don't let that be a factor for you. This is what looks like in the back of it. Our oil is multinational. It's packed in Italy with select oils from Italy, Spain, Greece, and Tunisia. So, that's kind of scary because olive oil is, olive is fruit, and olive oil is basically fruit juice, right? Because extra virgin olive oil is just juice that you extract from the olive fruit with nothing added, right? You would not buy your orange juice if it comes from four different countries. Why is this okay and we've been buying this for so long? So, this is why California olive oil industry is making a comeback. Because we have adopted a modern method that is 6 times more efficient than the old style. We don't have as much land as some of the European countries, but we are so much more efficient. And a lot of these mills you can go and visit, a lot of them are in Corning, so up north, or Napa, or down in Fresno. And a lot of them have open tours, and you can see that it's extremely efficient process compared to what you would see in Europe, where, you know, they do a lot of things based on tradition, which is great, especially in Greece. I mean, it's a family recipe. They've been doing it for so long, they don't want to change it, but a lot of times the quality and efficiency suffers. So I just want to highlight this because this is what I'm going to be talking to you about. These are the reports. This guy looks like, what's his name? Emerald. But it's not him. So. he actually is a famous chef who graduated from CIA in Greystone, but it's not him. So we published two reports based on the supermarket oil that I actually went with my husband's help because there was a backbreaking job. We went out to the store and I would just basically act as I was any consumer. I would pull out the oil from the store. And this one is based on the food service oil, which is the oil that the schools and restaurants or hospital, military really buy. So our idea is we wanted to survey quality of olive oil that you can buy here in both supermarket and in food service. A lot of people ask, why did you do this? Were you suspicious? You know, did you have suspicion of something was going on? Yes. And it's a math problem. Look, we are getting more oil than it's produced. This is how much extra virgin olive oil that's produced. This is how much we're getting. You don't need to be a chemist like me to figure out there's a problem here, right? So, yes, we went in expecting something was going on. But we need evidence. No one has ever done a large-scale study like this in the U.S., and we needed to. Now, another question. What's the most common adulterant in extra virgin olive oil, since we're talking about adulteration? A, hazelnut oil. B, soybean. C, canola. D, olive oil. How many of you think it's A? Okay, how many of you think it's B? How many of you think it's C? How many of you think it's D? Okay, so it used to be, 50 years ago, it used to be hazelnut oil. Now hazelnut oil is more expensive than olive oil. So it's more likely they're adulterating hazelnut oil with olive oil. Right? That's how things work, right? B and C are very common in olive oil, not in extra virgin. In our research, what we've seen, what's the adulterant in extra virgin is olive oil. Remember earlier I showed you the extra light olive oil? Yeah, we see that in extra virgin. And sometimes you can say, well, it's a mislabeling issue. That's just a nicer way to say adulteration. Right? So, we've been talking about extra virgin. I should tell you what extra virgin is, because that word is just very confusing, right? You can have virgin, but what do you have to be to get extra virgin? I know I always get in trouble with this, but so there are three criteria: processing, chemical, and sensory. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because it gets pretty technical and then that's not where we want to go. But I do want to just go over each one real quick with you. So this is a flow chart of what processing looks like. You start with olives and we remove most of the leaves. Not all of the leaves. Wash them. So they come over here and then they come to this molexer. Molexer basically just like a big grinder. You know, you have like the food processor at home. It's like a big food processor. It grinds everything up, including the pits of the olives. Uh-huh. Yeah. So everything goes in there. Okay. And then you crush everything, and then the oil droplet will start forming. Will start separating from the skin. You know, everything else. And so when they start separating, you put them in the centrifuge. Right? So if a centrifuge will spin it, the oil will come out, and then everything else goes to a different end. Okay? It's pretty easy. Really, it's just like making orange juice, right? You wash your fruits, and then you get a juice out. That's no additives. And sometimes people heat it up a little bit, but it's basically just with warm water to help the oil droplets to coagulate together. But there's no actual heating. Okay? The chemical criteria, It's a long, long 5-page thing that you can look over, but basically it's extremely inadequate. There are two organizations that have these criteria: International Olive Council, which is the oldest organization that oversees the olive oil quality. It's in Madrid. The problem with that is the U.S. is not a member of International Olive Council. Most of the members are in Spain. So, and it's based on your vote. So you get to vote in this International Olive Council. Your vote is based on how much olive oil you produce. This is why the U.S. is not a member. Because first of all, it costs $1 million to be a member. We will never have a vote. Our vote, it will be like 0.1%. So it's never enough to make a difference. That's the problem with the International Olive Council. And since we have published those reports, ever since then, they don't like us anymore. They have written us letters to tell us that they're disappointed in us. And so I think this door is probably closed for a while. But then we have USDA, right? USDA is on our side, and then they watch. Some people are laughing. They pay attention to food safety, food quality, right? So we've been working really closely with USDA because, like I said, science and politics sometimes need to go together. And USDA plays an important part in politics. In 2010, they have updated their olive oil standard. The last time when they wrote up an olive oil standard was in 1947. So when we got that updated version in 2010, that was so exciting. There's only one problem. You know what it is? It's a voluntary standard. So far, not too many people have volunteered to follow these rules. So hopefully that will change. But when people ask, is there a standard? Yes. That's a short answer. There is a USDA standard on olive oil. And in the standard, for chemistry, there's purity and quality. Purity basically says if this oil is made from olives or not, right? And quality basically has different criteria for different grades. So extra virgin has a criteria, olive oil has a criteria, light olive oil has a criteria, and there's also, have any of you heard about olive pomace oil? So there's also something called olive pomace oil. And you may not have heard about it, but you probably have consumed it at some point. Because that's one of the doctrines too. Pomace oil is basically what they take the leftover from when they make extra virgin. They take the leftover. There's still some oil left, right, in the leftover oil because the centrifugation cannot separate everything perfectly. They take that, they add solvent to it to extract out every single bit of it. And then they sell it as olive pomace oil. So that's olive pomace oil. But then, for the refined oil we talked about earlier, do you guys know what kind of oil they take it to refining? It's called lampante oil. Lampante means limp oil, which means oil that's not fit for human consumption. And you can read all about that in the standards. But that's why extra virgin is the top quality, because that is simple. No solvents, no refining, it's just the olive fruit juice. This is the glass cup that the sensory panel used. Earlier I said color is not an indicator of the quality. This is why the professionals, they put their oil in here and you cannot tell the color because they don't want that as a bias. So you will put this and you will do this with your little, I don't want to be washing glassware all night, so I didn't bring you black blue glasses, I'm sorry. But we'll put it on the heating mat to help the volatiles to develop so you can they can smell it. We'll talk about this in a little bit. But you see how it comes out narrow at the end or at the top? Mm-hmm. So you can put your nose in there so you can sniff. And then it's wider on the sides so the volatiles have room to move. It's a lot like wine tasting. And then you have to remember this when you taste your oil later. Okay, so there are three positive attributes in olive oil. Fruity, that's you expect, right? It's from the fruit. Bitter and pungent. These two, a lot of people, they don't expect that in the oil. Okay, but fresh oil should taste like grass. And you know, we're okay if our green tea, coffee, chocolate is bitter and pungent. We should be okay that our olive oil is bitter and pungent too, because the antioxidants are working for you, and a lot of them, like medicine, is bitter and pungent. This is what fresh fruit look like. When you right after you harvest them. In order to make high quality olive oil, you need to get this to the mill as soon as possible. If they sit for a day or two, it's not gonna be good. You cannot make high quality olive oil like that. Negative attributes. Rancidity. You think you have that, all of you kind of familiar with the smell of rancidity. If you drive by like a Chinese restaurant. I can say that I'm Chinese, so I'm not offending anybody here. Fusty, muddy, musty. So those come from fermentation of the olive fruit. If they sit in a pile for too long, you'll make fusty or musty oil. Kind of smell like a wet sack.
Yeah, what if it's cool?
If you store the olives
in the refrigerator,
that's okay for a small amount of time. But then you still worry about other reactions happening.
So you want to keep it at room temperature?
Yeah, but away from the heat, definitely. So somewhat cooler, slightly cooler than room temperature, I would say. Whining and frozen. So we try to harvest before the freeze. Sometimes that doesn't always happen because they don't tell you, I'm going to freeze. So that when you make olive oil from frozen fruit, the olive oil tastes really weird. Weird is the way to describe it because there's no really a word to describe it. And that oil goes bad in about 3 weeks, really, really fast. And that is a problem here in California. Especially up in Corning area, they do have a freeze. So the way to combat that is they just harvest it a little early. This is what moldy fruit looked like. And I actually took this picture because we had some moldy fruit in Davis. We had a short course and we got a mobile mill. So it's an olive oil mill on like a food truck, basically. And they came over here, we had our short course from Thursday to Saturday, and when I went to work on Monday, this is what we saw. Yeah, don't worry, we didn't make the oil on this. But I thought, this, oh, you know, you have things to us too. Okay. So if you imagine this is a line of quality, extra virgin is over here, fruity, bitter, and pungent. And you draw a line, this is where any defects are, and these are the defects. Okay, so in order to be, in terms of sensory standard, what qualifies as extra virgin is zero defect, so none of this, more than zero fruitiness. This is what's in the USDA standard. Now think about that. That's a minimal standard, right? I mean, we kind of hold extra virgin olive oil up here. It's high quality premium product. You pay premium price for it sometimes, depends on where you get it from. But if you think about it, it's a minimum standard. All we are asking is no defect and some flavor. Hopefully good flavor. So I don't want to go, all these reports are available on our website, but I just want to give you the summary of the report. Okay. I don't think I'm going to explain too much about these tests, but basically they test for the freshness oxidation of the oil, okay? And these are the three most common tests that the International Olive Council and the USDA stands very, you know, they're very proud of these tests. And we look at 169 oils, all of them in triplicates. It's a lot of work for our students. And so you can see, oh, that doesn't look too bad. Most of the oil passed these tests, right? You guys remember if you were, when you were in college, you used to do these titration, basically it's like a burette. You, like you have an acid and you add base until the color changes. Yeah, that's what we do. So it's like methods from 100 years ago. Really, I mean, you do one by one by one. You would think that now we have iPhone and iPad. We are not doing this yet. No, it's, that's what these tests are. Okay. But if we look at sensory, only 30%, 37% of these oil pass sensory. And we have adopted these two methods that developed by German scientists. There are newer and more sophisticated methods that require more expensive instruments. But we can do them in large batches. It's not a human thing, so you eliminate a lot of human error. Most of these oils don't really pass. So there's a misconnection there between older traditional methods and sensory and the newer chemistry methods that's more sophisticated and more sensitive. But then if we look at more closely, separating California oil and Australia oil. Australia have very similar agriculture like California. I mean, they're Australian, they make really good wine actually. And their olive oil is top quality as well. And most of them pass sensory and then these newer methods. The last method is extremely sensitive to light. And that's part of the reason why a lot of Australian oil didn't pass. I remember going to the store, I had a lot of trouble finding Australian oil. I imagine their market isn't huge here. You know, people don't know. They don't even know California makes oil. I can't imagine they know Australia produces oil. But they were sitting on top of the shelf collecting the light from the supermarket, and there was dust all over the bottle. So I don't know how long it's been sitting in, right? And that's something that, you know, they have to keep in mind where they place their oil at a supermarket. So when we publish our report, we had two drafts of the report. One, we name all the brands, good and bad. You know, the oil that passed, the oil didn't pass. One, we didn't. And we were trying to decide which one we should go because, you know, we talked to the university attorney. No one has ever published anything like this before. We knew this was going to be controversial. People were going to criticize the way we did it. They were going to criticize, you know, whatever room that they can find. So we knew that was going to happen, but still, we wanted to do the best we can to the public, and we decide to go with the draft that has a list of all the names. Mm-hmm. The reason is because our goal is to educate, but not just, we don't want to scare people away, right? We're not here to say, stop buying olive oil altogether because you don't know what you're getting. Our goal is to say, if you know how to find good oil, then you don't have to be scared. And there's a lot of good ones out there. Every country makes good oil, and every country makes bad oil, including California. Well, California is not a country, but California does make bad oil sometimes. But the problem with the European oil, what we've seen, is that they don't give us their good stuff. That's the problem. A lot of times when we get their oil, it's already 3 years old. They're 3 years old. And you don't want 3 years old stuff. It doesn't matter how good it was 3 years ago, right? And then, our results were verified. Well, we knew we were right, but Consumer Reports verified they did the same thing with a much smaller scale study. They found only 17% of Mediterranean oil qualified or they met the USDA standard as extra virgin. And then when I say New World, that means California, Australia. basically a Chilean oil. Some of you have seen that. And it's got 100%. Yeah, and this, you know, a lot of people read consumer reports, and this their report actually has a pretty large impact in, on the for the industry. I think they did a Trader Joe's oil, and for a while Trader Joe's sold out that oil at every single store for like 3 months. Yeah, so I think it did a huge favor for them. Our report found Costco's oil was good. And Costco was very happy about that too.
Costco and Peter Jones of California oils?
Yeah.
Just California.
Yeah. So basically, to sum up this part of the research, remember that line we talked about earlier, and this is where extra virgin is? This is where majority of the Mediterranean oil is. It's a lot of them are borderline, a lot of them are on the negative side of things. And this is where we see a lot of new world oil is. Now, interestingly, I have to put this quote up here. A sensory scientist at UC Davis did a consumer study. So when I talk about sensory panel in our report, these are professional panelists that's been trained and certified. They usually go through 1 year of training, and then they go through 1 year of being an apprentice, and then they become a member of the tasting panel. And then you need at least 8 people on your panel so that they can work together. So that's different from what I'm talking about here. This, we're talking about consumer. So they will go to a farmer's market, or they will go stand in front of a supermarket, give people oil, and say, do you like this oil? Do you like this oil? When we have our professional sensory panel, we don't ask them if you like this oil or not. It's not a liking or not liking. It's how fruity is this on the scale 1 to 10? How rancid is this on the scale 1 to 10? Okay, so that's the difference between our professional sensory panel and the consumer tasting. So in this case, we're talking about consumer tasting. Okay, so a bunch of graduate students, they went out there, they had all different oil, and then they asked people, do you like it? Do you not like it? People love rancid oil. There's a huge barrier between consumer sensory data and our professional sensory data. Part of the reason is because that's the taste that they're familiar with. Don't we all eat things not necessarily because it tastes amazing, but because it brings us comfort and then it reminds us of certain things? Yeah. Tastes familiar? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So that's our challenge. We've been trained to like rancid oil. Okay, so on that note, let's take some oil. So in front of you, you should have 3 cups. That's label 1, 2, and 3. So let's pick up number 1. I'll walk you through it. And then lift up the lid and then stick your nose in it. Kind of board it up in your palm. So hold it like this in your palm so you can board up the oil a little bit. And then take a big sniff. Smell anything? And when you are ready, you're going to take a sip and do basically what you do with wine. Get some air in your mouth to activate these compounds. There you go. And then swallow and see if you feel anything.
Tastes like oil.
Okay, that's a really good comment, actually. Tastes like oil. That's a good comment. you smell?
Rinse.
You smell burning in the back.
Burning in the back?
Yeah.
Some people are shaking their head like they're disgusted. Yeah. How can you do this to me? That's what we, when we say pungency, that's what, sometimes people, sometimes it's so pungent, it makes you cough, and sometimes people will rinse this oil, they will say, oh, this is a three cover, or this is a five cover. Okay, when you are ready, you do the same thing with number two. Put it in your palm, beat it up a little bit, and then stick your, put your nose in there so you can take a good sniff. See, this is really good, just go home after this. You can go home and then do the same thing with the oil.
That's the one.
It's better than the first one. Okay. Number three. Grassy. Okay, so when you, some of you said number one tastes like oil. Did you feel that way when you taste number three?
No.
No.
There you go. Fresh olive oil should taste like fresh grass.
Oh.
It's supposed to taste like this.
So number three is a really, really fresh oil from Chile. It's this year's harvest. Like I said, you know, I'm not like, you know, you have to buy California. There's some really good oils out there. Question in the back?
Could you repeat louder what each one was?
Okay, you mean the brand?
The brand or at least the type of oil?
Sure. The first oil is Pompan. Have you heard about that brand?
Yeah.
Is it extra virgin?
It's extra virgin. My husband's holding it up for you. We don't normally do this. We don't normally tell people what they are.
Thank you, ma'am.
He's a very good olive oil
bottle. And
is that why they go to the outer part of the bottle? They probably put fines through it. They imported a clean glass bottle, they keep you pouring right through it.
You know, they actually made an improvement on that packaging. That same bottle used to be clear plastic. I don't know if you guys remember. They also sell those in the smaller packages.
Oh, yeah.
So the green plastic does help to prevent the light getting to it a little bit. Question?
Do they add a colorant to that?
To the oil?
Yeah, to make it look more...
Not this one.
Oh.
But sometimes they do add color to all of
them. But the plastic that it's contained in, it could have methylene chloride and things like that.
Yeah, it's true.
From the sunlight or whatever, ultraviolet lights. Or
it's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, this oil here, can you guys see the color here?
Mm-hmm.
So this one, it says pure olive oil. This is an example from food service. This comes in 1 gallon. And they don't sell this at a supermarket. This oil is a pure olive oil. Our research shows this one is actually 70% canola. Yeah, but I had this oil for 2 years. It's so green. It's still so green. And this oil had chlorophyll added to it. But most of the time when you get your oil from the store, that's not an issue.
I have another question. Will you notice, or how will you...
This is just a really common oil. I mean, when you go to a store, this is not bad. When you buy this oil, it's not bad. It's in a clear glass bottle, which means the light can get to it. So it depends on how long it's been sitting on the shelf. And like I said, the third one is from a small producer in Chile.
Is this Italian from Pedro Joseph?
It says it's packed in Italy. Doesn't say where it came from.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to move on with the talk. Now everybody's listening to my husband instead of me, so I'm coming up. I think he's enjoying this. But I want to move on to tell you our future. Olive Center 2.0. So we've been around for about 5 years. We're looking ahead and we're really excited about what we can do for the industry. For the next 5 years, we are looking at pushing the tipping point, providing services, and pursuing innovations. And I want to talk to you a little bit about each one really quick. Pushing the tipping point. Like I said, we put on these events and short courses, talking about the sensory and chemistry and process of olive oil. We want to keep educating the producers, the food buyers. If the supermarket carry high quality olive oil, our consumers will have a much easier time getting those products. And chefs. chefs are getting very interested in the quality of oil they carry at a supermarket. I mean, or at the restaurant. I mean, when you go to the restaurant, often they give you bread, right? And we, some people said, you know, the quality of that bread tells you something about that restaurant. The olive oil they serve with that bread should also tell you something about that restaurant. And this food fraud that we just talked about with adulteration, it's not just olive oil. You probably have heard it happens in honey, happens in wine, happens a lot in pomegranate juice where it's adulterated with apple juice and grape juice. There's a lot of problems there. So we are reaching out to other people who are working with other foods, and we're at a perfect place at Robert Mondavi Institute for Wine and Food Science to do this. So, and again, this requires collaboration between a scientist, a politician, and the media. Also is important because we need that to get that information out to the public. If the public requests for it, then there will be, they will feel like we need to change this for the better. The last one, or providing services, we want to make all everything we have available for free for people, like an iPad or an iPhone. Because these days we have all the documents, our research on our website. But you know, people don't want to, they don't want to go through that trouble printing everything out, have it, the information. We also have a fee for service sensory panel, so people can submit their sample to us or evaluate their oil for them. And that will help the producers to know the quality of their product. And then we would often provide them some advice as to how they can improve their product. And pursuing innovation. Like I said earlier, a lot of these traditional chemistry tests, they're like this. We're over that now, unfortunately. I mean, they serve a purpose, but we don't have the time to go to do one sample one at a time, right? If there's going to be a standard that's being that's enforced, not regular and voluntary, there's going to be a lot of samples that need to be tested very regularly. And if we're doing one sample at a time, we'll never be able to keep up with the production. So we need a way to do a huge batch of samples at a time to test for the quality and the purity of the product. This is at UC Davis. So this is our experimental orchard. These trees are a little taller now. This is right after we planted them. So we planted 20 different varietals of olive trees so that we can go out there and take them to study them experimentally. And we have a bench top olive oil extraction system where we start from olives and then we make olive oil in the lab. That sounds great, but it takes all day to make up this much olive oil. So we'll never sell that oil, but that we use for research and it's been helping us tremendously. So we have the resources to go out from the orchard all the way to olive oil within our center. These are our research focuses for the next couple of years. So we're going to be keep doing research on olive growing, processing, and also environmental concerns. There's a lot of concerns about waste management for olives. We have a 3-year study, ongoing study on that. And sensory and chemistry correlation. There's a lot of times that the sensory will say this oil is bad, but they will pass all the chemistry. But sensory, you can't get rid of sensory. Right, because when you go home and buy your oil, you were tasting them. So we need to find a better correlation between chemistry and sensory, authenticity and traceability. I think you all will appreciate that. You know, we need our product to be authentic, and we can trace where it comes from. And health and nutrition. There's a lot of good information and a lot of information that's out there. It's confusing to people. Oh, it's good for you, it's bad for you. This fat is good for you. Coconut butter is better. Or, you know, there's all these talks, but we need some really, really firm research to back this up.
I have a question.
Sure.
You talked about the management of the waste from the production. What do they do with the waste right now?
Yeah, so right now, there are a few things that they do. So when they get what is called olive pomace, that's what, you know, the olive byproduct, basically, after you make olive oil. And depends on their facility, this stuff can be kind of wet, kind of like slushy. And one way to do it is to separate the water from this whole thing, so you have water and then somewhat a dry pumice. That water can go back into the field, although it's not always good because it's pretty acidic and it may damage the orchard. The dry stuff, a lot of times people just sell it for animal feed. But we are talking about really high value product here because most of the antioxidants are water soluble, right? So they're not in the oil, they're actually in this byproduct. And that's exactly what our research is about. Our research is about extracting out those valuable compounds before you do anything to it.
Are most of the olive oils made with a blend of varieties of olives?
Yeah, there's a lot of blends, but there's also a lot of single varietal.
Does it usually identify that on the outside of the bottle?
Yeah. For as far as most California produced oil, they do say if it's a single varietal, and they will say it's a single varietal. If it's not, they will say it's a blend of Arbequina, Arbusana, Coroniki, or different varietals.
Question?
Yeah. Going back to the wastewater that comes off that, can't that be, since it's so acidic, can it be treated with sodium hydroxide to...
Yeah, but then you're adding more chemical back to the field. Yeah, sometimes people dilute it.
Yeah.
But, you know, water is not always so readily available. That's part of the reason why olive trees are so great for California, because they don't need a lot of water.
They do.
Yeah.
How does the organic segment of producers and the market for organic olive oil, is that a factor in the standards, and are they driving any of the quality?
Yeah, no, it's not. The organic part of it is not a specific part of the standard. And there are some organic producers out there, and they grow their fruit organically. It's not easy. The cost is high. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that it's better.
Yeah, it's hard to draw a correlation between quality and then whether the oil is organic or not.
Is there consistency from one bottle to another of the same olive oil? And from 1 year to another?
They will taste a little different every year, like wine,
yeah.
But the quality, hopefully, is high every year.
But the taste might change.
The taste might change a little, yeah. And then it depends on how much you rain that year and the weather, how hot you got during the summertime. There's a lot of factors. I think the guy in the back.
That kind of answers my question, I think. So it's rated like wine, right?
Uh-huh.
So would an older varietal, or would an older, like, single estate grown grape from a good year still be good like 20 years later, maybe even 30, or it gets worse? So yeah, use it within 15 months.
Yeah, we'll talk about this. Yeah. Question?
What kind of chemicals are used, like pesticides and whatever, on the olive trees?
There's some copper, not very much at all. Yeah.
So buying organic doesn't really make a big difference.
There is, there's some fruit fly issues that I know people do use some, but it kind of depends on the region too. Some places are just so much more susceptible to fruit fly.
You said something about, is it copper hydrolyzed or is it copper naphthenate that you would use? You said something about an insecticide?
Yeah, I think there's a couple that's been approved. I'm not sure exactly the names of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I know there's, I think, a couple that's been approved to use.
What about first cold pressed? Is that, are you going to talk about that? Because I see that on bottles first.
Yeah, it's a marketing term.
Does it make any difference?
Basically, no. Like I said, it's first of all, no one's really pressing anything. You saw the processing. But it should be the first batch of oil that comes out. Yeah.
You said you favorably recommended the Costco brand.
We didn't know. We didn't. We just our research. We tested a whole bunch of oils, and Costco passed the test.
That the bottle in Italy, Kirkland.
They're Toscano, I think, the one that's in a dark glass bottle. Costco carries a few different ones. Yeah. Okay. So, sure.
One more. I think at the beginning you said that there's no money in this business.
There's no,
no one has making much money
yeah, at
so
all.
So wouldn't that indicate an oversupply of olive oil generally, and wouldn't that encourage adulteration?
Well,
I mean, in my business, that's what happens.
No one's making money because the price for extra virgin olive oil is not where it needs to be. Because the cheap, you cannot make high quality extra virgin olive oil at the price that
people are willing to pay.
No.
Well, that's a good question. I think that's somewhat a philosophical question. How long would it take for people to start paying for the high quality product? But my theory is that once you have the real stuff, it will be very hard for you to go back and buy the rancid oil.
Well, I think you're right, and I don't think that it's you or me or anybody else in this room that makes that decision. It's the big retailers that makes that decision.
Yeah, and then, you know, you may take a while.
I think we have to make it at a personal level.
I mean, it's...
We have to make it at a personal level, because 8 ounces is like $15, mm-hmm. and we just purchased some of that, and there's a big difference between that and the rancidity that we taste here.
Well, they're just people that won't take the risk. I mean, I'm talking about the retailer again. They won't take the risk of buying the good stuff.
Yeah, I've been very encouraged. A lot of supermarket chains have reached out to us and want us to help them to make sure that they're carrying high-quality product. So I'm very, very encouraged.
I'm endorsing what you're doing. I think, you know, it's only going to happen through education.
It has to happen through education, and, you know, that's something that's not... doesn't happen so quick. So, but you know, as you guys are here, you can go home and educate your family and friends. So, you know, we're making progress. So, I want to leave you with this slide. You know, I talk about all these things, all these issues, but I want to leave you with something very practical. How do you, as a consumer, to go out and buy high quality olive oil? I don't endorse brands because, you know, sometimes one brand. I actually had one good Pompeian olive oil once, you know, so it surprised me, but, you know, it's hard to say. Best way is to look for these tips. Know the taste of freshness. You know now, she tastes like grass, right? She smells fresh. Look for harvest date. If there's no harvest date, definitely look for best before date. Harvest date is the best because, you know, it tells you exactly when the oil was made. You want to buy it as close to that date as possible.
What about the bottling date?
Bottling date?
Yeah, because sometimes I see harvest and bottle.
That's tricky because you don't know how long it's been sitting in the tank before they bottle it.
Yeah, if they're 2 months apart, probably not a good choice.
So that is tricky. Yeah. Number three, look for a quality seal. California Olive Oil Council gives out these seals, and then they have a lot more strict criteria than the USDA standards. And if you see the seal, that means this oil has gone through that the sensory and the chemistry test. That would get them the seal. Okay. So this is not a voluntary or this. In order to get the seal, you have to do these tests. That's not voluntary. You have to do them. Number four, keep your oil in a cool and dark place. If your oil comes in a clear glass bottle, wrap them in aluminum foil and then put them in your cabinet. Or transfer them into a dark bottle. Because light, heat, and oxygen, or air, these three are the biggest enemies for the freshness of your olive oil. So you want to keep it in the dark. You don't store it in the refrigerator. It doesn't because you will get solid. But just put it in a cabinet. And number five, size it right. If you are a small family, you don't need to buy 1 gallon at a time. Even though it may seem like it's a good deal, it's not really a good deal, right? Because you may not be extra virgin, or you may not taste fresh by the time when you use up the last of it. Okay? So, that's pretty much summarized my talk.
Have you tested Bariani and how are they? And also some of the olives from the Shenandoah Valley, which is kind of near Yolo.
Yeah, we have. I think actually Bariani, I think it might be in our first report. I think it was fine.
Yeah, I was a fan, but it's hard to find up here.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Farmers market is a good place if you're lucky enough to have an olive oil producer that sells at a farmers market.
Yes.
In Davis, we have a guy who sells there. He is the grower, he's the producer, he is the person who bottles it, he's the person who sells it to you at farmers market. I mean, that you feel pretty good like about it. Purchasing that, and you know it's a fresh product. Yeah.
Oh, do you think it's, have you tested the use of sucking the oxygen out like you do with wine bottles to keep it fresh longer?
We haven't tested that specifically, but in our lab, we do replace that headspace with nitrogen every single time, and we have seen that it helps to delay the oxidation a little bit.
15,
but
16, 17.
But yeah, but you know, I don't know how many home cooks will be, you know, every time you pour the oil out, you have, I'm not sure how practical that is for a home cook,
Is price an indication of the quality?
Nope, definitely not. For our study, we actually break it down, I think, cent per gallon or cent per ounce. And we don't see any correlation between the quality and the price.
Ladies, have you looked at what happens to oil when you heat it? Like when we do buy this quality oil and then we bring it and we cook with it.
Yeah.
Does it, like the flavors and things like that, is there any?
Does the flavor change?
Yeah, and the chemical structure.
Yeah, so there's been quite a bit of research and debate about this, but you know, fresh olive oil actually has higher smoke point, so that's what the cooking temperature we're talking about, than low quality one. And a lot of them are about 370 Fahrenheit to 400. Many of us don't cook that high temperature. I mean, that means it's good for baking, it's good for sauteing. A lot of times people say you can only drizzle it on top of the salad. There's actually a lot more use than that.
How about when you internalize, you metabolize the oils, when you have the rancidity factor?
Yeah.
And is there a carcinogenic type thing?
Sure.
Too with the,
yeah.
Because you can't have that in your gut either.
Right.
So this is a lot better for
right.
your body.
Yeah.
What feedback have you had from the professional chefs you talked to about using one level of oil or another for their saute, for the line cooking?
Yeah.
Do they use it all?
Yeah, I can tell you the one on campus, there's a restaurant on campus, he used just extra virgin.
Does he? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
So is he concerned about the same thing you're concerned about?
Oh, yeah.
Even though he's sauteing with it?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, higher quality fresh olive oil has higher smoke point.
Well,
that's so,
a good
thing.
You
know,
that's
yeah.
a good thing.
You order a monster.
You can't.
Did you bring cases and cases to me?
No. I do research and hopefully people want to buy a product.
I just wanted to comment that down in Reno at Collin Ranch, there's this wonderful little place in the shopping center that sells fresh olive oils, and they do olive oil tastings and wonderful balsamic vinegars, all different flavors, and it's close by.
Yeah, there's been more and more of those olive oil tasting bars where you can go and then you can taste every single oil before you purchase them. And a lot of stores, in fact, they only carry California sealed, so only oil that's been certified.
Is that a high rate of phenols?
It depends. A lot of the phenolics based on the, it depends on the varietal.
I was wondering if you were looking at the omega-6 versus omega-3 ratios, mm-hmm. and if you see a difference between the fresher and...
Not so much.
Okay.
Yeah, that so you don't... That freshness doesn't really impact the ratio of the fatty acids in the oil. Varietal does, but not a huge difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Question in the back?
Has your report had any influence on the large... food processing companies like as Paul Newman's own company decided to join some sort of council or quality standard or anything?
Yeah, there's we definitely have made a lot of impact, and there's an organization that it's basically works with the importers, and we talk to each other from time to time, you know, trying to come to a common ground. I mean, you know, I think there's a common ground even between the importers and the domestic producers. If we put quality, you know, in front of us, then that's our goal for the consumers to reach.
Any other questions?
There's a really good book called Extra
Virginity. Written by Tom Mueller.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
and that helps give a lot more information. It just builds on your topic.
Yeah, Tom Mueller, we work together. In fact, we're writing an article together. Yeah, he's American who now lives in Italy, who has written this book in a very romantic and scandalous way about the industry of olive oil. So it's a really good read, and he's done a lot of research. He mentioned about Olive Center in his book.
Yes.
Any more questions? Yeah.
The trees that started this whole research that used to be the problem before you started harvesting them, I was curious about the background where they came from and how they ended up there. It sounded like maybe there used to be an olive oil industry.
They planted a long time ago because people like the way they look. Yeah, I don't think they were looking to harvest them. But we did have a small olive oil industry a long, long time ago. And what happened was they were traditional and they based on hand picking. Now the oil you taste, most of them, they're, well, not all of them, but a lot of them are mechanical harvesting, which is a lot easier. But the problem was you couldn't keep up with the importers, right? If you're a hand harvest every single one, you really can't afford it. Yeah, so now the industry is making a comeback with modern technology.
So
yeah.
Those ones were planning for looks.
I think more or less. I don't know. I wasn't born back then, but I think so. Yeah, I mean, because there are some of them, they were definitely planted for harvesting. But a lot of them, when they're on the side of the road, it would be pretty hard to harvest.
Where did the root stock come from for the bunch of tomatoes? The girls.
Are they U.S. roots now?
Yeah.